Today's edition of the Between the Ropes podcast is brought to you by Audible. Right now, you can go to audibletrial.com/between the ropes and you can sign up for a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. Now, what's great about Audible is that you can now listen to all the books that you don't have time to read. Or if you're like me, you're just too lazy to read. But there's plenty of books that are out there that you want to find out about. You want to read. And this makes it easier for you because you can just listen to the books. Audible has over 180,000 titles. That's a ton of titles from every genre out there. Thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and others. And you can listen to them on your iPhone, your Kindle, your Android, or your MP3 player. They've got a lot of wrestling titles that are out there as well, including autobiographies from AJ Lee, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, and others as well. Go right now to audibletrial.com/between the ropes. You get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. Even after your free trial ends, if you decide not to stay with Audible, you get to keep that free audiobook download forever. But if you like it, sign up and you can enjoy Audible for now until the end of time. So go to audibletrial.com/between the ropes. Take advantage of this great opportunity right now. 30-day free trial and a free audiobook download. That's at audibletrial.com/between the ropes. Welcome, everybody, to the Between the Ropes podcast. I'm Brian Fritz. Appreciate everybody for listening. By the way, two podcasts coming up this week. So coming up on Thursday will be the second podcast with me talking about Raw, SmackDown, anything and everything else that is going on in the wrestling world. That includes a little bit of a wacky Monday night on Raw where it was revealed that Jason Jordan is the son of Kurt Angle. That's quite the angle. Let me say that again. Jason Jordan is the son of Kurt Angle. So there's a lot of things to talk about on that. Plus, I'm a little bit ticked off when it comes to that because it means the end of American Alpha, which I have voiced plenty of times on Twitter, at Brian Fritz, that I am not too thrilled because I am a huge fan of American Alpha, and now it is gone away. We'll be talking about that a lot more in depth later on the week on the second podcast. On this podcast, though, it'll be a conversation with TNA original Cowboy James Storm. I say TNA, and I know that they are now Global Force Wrestling, but he's been there since the beginning when they were called TNA, and he's been there for 15 years. So I feel like I can still call it TNA when I'm talking about James Storm because he has been there for so long. And there's a lot of ground to cover when it comes to the conversation with him because he has been there since the beginning. We talk about Slammiversary. We talk about the DCC angle that didn't exactly work out the way that he had hoped. He goes into great detail about that. Plus, we talk about Jeff Jarrett being back with the company now and also Global Force Wrestling with the new name for the company. And there's a lot of stuff that we talk about. It's a pretty long conversation. And because of that, I want to do the second podcast later in the week rather than making a mega pod that was going to be about 2 hours long. So hope everybody enjoys the conversation. Quick reminder, please subscribe to Between the Ropes. If you haven't done it yet, go to iTunes. Also rate and review the podcast. That helps it out a lot. I mean, a lot. Please rate the podcast. Give it 5 stars. If you're listening right now, if you've been listening for a long time, you enjoy the podcast, please do that for me. Give it 5 stars. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Google Play, Stitcher, the TuneIn app, and you can also find it on SoundCloud. And if you could, too, please support Between the Ropes on Patreon. That allows me to do more Between the Ropes because of your generous contributions to me and supporting the podcast and supporting the website. Even $1 a month helps out. I've said that plenty of times. It's just $1 a month. Sign up to Patreon, $1 a month, and I'll be eternally grateful. And if you want to give more than $1 a month, that'd be fantastic as well. So if you could, please support Between the Ropes on Patreon. It's patreon.com/between the ropes. So let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Cowboy James Storm. He is the Cowboy James Storm from Global Force Wrestling. How's life treating you up in Tennessee?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. I don't think there's anywhere on the planet right now that's a cool place. It's pretty hot here, so of course I got the cold ones on ice.
Yeah, I was gonna say. So, what is too early for you to enjoy an adult beverage?
I would say when the mountains are not blue.
Okay.
My drift. So if they're not blue, it's a little too early.
Because I was going to say, is there a certain time in the day? It's just like, you know what? I could really enjoy one, but probably a little bit too early.
No, you know, it's very funny though, because you know, I'm notorious in the gimmick about drinking and all this, and you know, I've lived the life of it. But when I'm home, I never drink.
Really?
And yeah, because of my kids. So I grew up in you know, my stepdad, he was an alcoholic and stuff. So when I'm home, you know, I don't want my kids to see me, you know, drinking and all that stuff. So I don't drink when I'm home.
How old are your kids now? You got two little ones, right?
Well, I got three that I know of.
Three, so, okay.
yeah, I got a daughter who actually turns 12 in a week, and then have a son that's 5, and I have a brand newborn that's 6 months old.
Wow. 12, that's starting to get to a notorious age where it's a little bit of backlash towards dad.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, hopefully, you know, I know how I was when I was around 12 and 13, so hopefully she's not anything close to that. So, but she has a good head on her shoulders. You know, her mom keeps her in line too, so that's good.
So you just came off a Slammiversary not too long ago. You had the strap match with EC3. How did you feel coming off of that match?
You know, it was, you know, to me, you know, you can always look back at it and say, oh, I wish I'd have done this different or this that different, or, you know, I wish I had more time. And, you know, in a way, I wish we had more time to kind of tell a better story and, you know, beat the hell out of each other a lot more. But, you know, that's not up to us. And, you know, after I got done, you know, the story that we told in the ring, I thought was pretty good. But overall, I thought we could have done a better job of telling the overall story better in the short time that we had it was like two and a half months.
Well, you guys beat the hell out of each other pretty good, though. I mean, not only in that match, but, I mean, leading up to that match, you guys had some pretty good battle wounds.
Yeah, you know, I always tell people, they're like, man, like, how was those lashes? And I'll tell you straight up, they hurt, you know. And you know, he gave me 33, and I told him, I said, well, I said, just to let you know, when I give you this receipt, on that receipt, it's going to say 34. And that, you know, that's exactly what I did. And the match is one of the stories we want to tell is, you know, I'm coming to give you 34 since you only gave me 33. So, but, you know, if you've ever been whipped, you know, by a belt at all, you know, it doesn't feel good. But he actually got off pretty easy because, like, to me, it's I don't want to say easier, but it didn't hurt as much with the strap. As because you don't have that much freedom to like kind of rear back and hit each other as he did with the belt when I was handcuffed.
Yeah, I was going to say that belt, especially once you get the buckle involved in there, that's not good.
Yeah, and when you hit the same spot two or three times, man, it feels like someone's taking a lighter to your skin. It does not feel good.
So what's with you in the physical matches? I mean, is that something you like because You just had this one with EC3, but you've had some notorious ones over the years with, like, Chris Harris, and you had one with Magnus a couple of years ago at Slammiversary. So do you like it when it gets that wild and crazy?
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say I live for them, but, you know, I enjoy them because, to me, that's kind of what wrestling is, you know, that's the Memphis style, you know, if people will say the Southern style of, you know, just beating the hell out of each other. And I think that's what I kind of grew up watching is, when you get ready to end a feud or something, like, you know, you have that match where you just look at each other and say, look, we're going to go out there and we're going to beat the hell out of each other, plain and simple. And, you know, and it's just one of those, and I always tell people there's a difference between just beating the hell out of each other and safely beating the hell out of each other. I take pride in not hurting people, but still make them know that I was there to beat the hell out of them.
And there needs to be a reason for it, too, when it comes to the story. Is if you're telling the proper story that leads up to something like that, then it makes a lot more sense. It's not just we're just doing this just because we like beating the hell out of each other. There's some meaning behind it. And there is something that brings out the emotion of it that's brought it to this place to where we are going to really rip each other to shreds.
Right. And that's what I think a lot of people get lost nowadays, you know, when they're putting their matches together is, they just want to always go out there and do this crazy stuff. Well, if you keep doing it over and over, then the people are accustomed to it, and they kind of get tired of you seeing you do it, you know. So I always like to kind of do something in the first match where you know, that is what will lead up to, you know, like the final matches. You know, he came out there and he whipped me with the belt or whatever, and then we kind of used that fire to set up, you know, the strap match to be the final match.
So how are you feeling right now? Because I believe you suffered a concussion in that match, right?
Yeah, I'm good, man. You know, I'm all checked out with the doctor and stuff. You know, I'm not, you know, we taped right after that, so I wasn't on any of the tapings. But as of right now, you know, I feel really good.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels weird to be watching Impact Wrestling and not see James Storm on there. I mean, it's been few and far between over the last 15 years.
Yeah, you know, it's, and I always pride myself, you know, I can get hurt, but I'm not hurt enough where I can't go out and work, you know, because no matter what, I'm you know, as JR put it, I'm a workhorse. Like, you know, no matter what, unless, you know, I'm basically paralyzed, you know, there's nothing that's going to keep me from, like, going out and performing in that ring.
So, like I said, you've been there since the beginning of Impact. And now Global Force Wrestling. By the way, does it feel weird to be calling it Global Force Wrestling from your perspective?
It does. You know, I don't think I've gotten used to it yet. Like, I still, you know, I still call it TNA Wrestling, you know, and or Impact Wrestling. You know, I haven't gotten used to the, you know, the Global Force part of it yet.
Yeah, it's strange to say, but, like, you've been there since the beginning. I mean, you were at the first show 15 years ago. What do you remember about that first show, looking back on it now?
You know, I just remember, you know, looking around and at a locker room. And at the time, it was different because you kind of had the locker room of the guys who were, I don't want to say just coming up, but just kind of making their faces pretty well known on TV and stuff. You know, the likes of me, Chris Harris, Abyss, AJ, you know, Low-Key, guys like that who had their locker room, but then you had the other guys, you know, like Scott Hall and all those guys who were in a separate locker room. So I just remember kind of looking around and the guys who, like myself, that weren't known yet, you know, we had to go out there and we had to prove ourselves even more to an brand new audience that haven't seen us. And, you know, just over a course of, you know, a year or 2 years of, you know, Impact Wrestling, going from Huntsville to Nashville and stuff, you know, we did a pretty good job of it, I think.
Considering, you know, the company is now 15 years old and you've been there since the beginning, there's only been a very small stretch where you really weren't there. But the way that I look at it now, there's been some other guys that have had long tenures there, but no one's really been longer than you. And I kind of look at it as you are, you know, arguably, when you don't talk about Jeff, but when you look about guys that have been in the ring and continue to be in the ring, you're probably the most relatable guy when you think of, you know, when you think of Impact Wrestling. The first guy that comes to my mind now is James Storm.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, nice of you to say. It's just one of those things, because I remember when TNA was running pretty heavy house shows and live events and stuff, and me and Bobby, we had worked 121 dates in 1 year, which for Impact Wrestling is a lot. And I remember us just being the two guys who, you know, were on every show, everything, no matter what, like all year that year. So, and I think that's where we kind of developed the names, the workhorses, because no matter what they put us on, we went out there and we worked the shows.
You know, so many different things in life can be cyclical, but especially in wrestling. But sometimes things just feel kind of, okay, I don't think this is ever going to happen again, but then it's wrestling and it happens again. And now Jeff Jarrett is back with the company and he's running creative and, you know, he's got his executive producer role. Did you ever think that this day could happen where Jeff was back and in a position of power with the company?
You know, like, just like you said, you know, you never say never in wrestling. You know, knowing Jeff, he's been in wrestling, you know, forever. You know, his family has always been there with the Memphis wrestling and stuff. It's just, you know, it's just, to me, it was a matter of time before he was able to kind of, like, even if it wasn't coming back to Impact Wrestling, it was just a matter of time before he made GFW work somehow, just because that's the kind of guy he is. Like, he'll make it work somehow, no matter what. You know, but to see him back in Impact, you know, yeah, it was a surprise to myself.
It's like having the band back together. You got Jeff, you got Dutch, you got Scott D'Amore. It's like, wait, what year is this? Is it 2017 or is it 2005?
You know, and like you said, never say never. And, you know, now they're, you know, like I said, they're running the show again. So
what's it like for you? Because you've worked for them for such a long period of time, and you know them really well. To have that kind of sense of familiarity when it comes to the people that are making the decisions behind the scenes, what's that like for somebody like you?
You know, to me, especially, you know, now in my career, it doesn't matter to me really who's running what, because I'm the guy now. I show up and I do what's asked of me. Like, I don't try to argue why and stuff. Like, I know my role. Like, I know that, to me, it's a physical play, you know, professional wrestling. You know, I didn't sign up to be the writer. I signed up to be the wrestler. So whatever the writer wants me to do now, you know, I don't show up and try to bitch and say, oh, well, I wouldn't do this or my character wouldn't do that, you know, because that's not what I signed up for. I signed up to go out and do what they asked me to do, and that's what I do now.
Have you ever wanted to have a bigger role in creative? Because, I mean, I've heard different things about that, like your role behind the scenes when it comes to creative. And clear that up for me. Are you on the creative team, or have you been, or how does that work?
No, you know, I'm not anywhere near creative, but you know, I think they, you know, I respect them enough, and I think they respect me enough to listen to my ideas, because they know that I've been there and done it, and some of my ideas that, you know, I've came up with and went to them, you know, have worked or whatever. So, you know, if I go to them, if I believe in something a lot, you know, and I go to them and say, hey, what about this? You know, they'll trust me enough to, you know, to either go along with it or kind of work it into a storyline somehow that they've already set.
Does it feel differently now being with the group compared to where it was last year with, you know, you had different management, you had different people in creative, and things have totally flipped over this past year, especially with Anthem now owning the company?
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say different or whatever, because to me, the locker room has always been the same. Like, I can't say enough for the guys that, you know, have been at Impact, because they go out there and they kill it no matter who the management is or who owns it or whatever. But, you know, I think there's been a different drive, you know, since Jeff and him took it over, because I think a lot of people know that, you know, Jeff don't take any BS, you know. So I think people, you know, they show up, and I don't want to say try harder, but they know that they got to go out there and they got to perform at a high level.
And it's also, too, that you're, and it's nothing against anybody else there, but you're speaking with somebody that's been there. He's been in the ring. He's been in the business for, you know, 40 years or whatever it's been. So it's a little bit different, I think, when you look at somebody that's now in charge, and you can relate to him. He can relate to you.
Right, exactly. And it's the same way, you know, when I had to be handcuffed and take 33 lashes with a belt. Like, I'm not going to go to Jeff and complain about it, because he's done that. Like, he's, you know, earlier days of TNA, Raven handcuffed him and just beat the crap out of him with the belt. So for me to go to Jeff and be like, man, I don't know about this. But that, you know, I don't want to say it makes me sound like a sissy, but hey, don't be a crybaby. Just do your job. And so, you know, that's what I do.
Yeah, it's kind of tough when he's he's been there.
You can't go to Jeff and be like, man, I don't know about 33, man.
Jeff, can we go with 10?
Let me show you this tape.
Yeah. He can show you a couple of tapes where he got beat the hell, you know, that even worse probably than 33, you know, so. Yeah.
Right, exactly. You know, and this day and time, it's hard to get, you know, sympathy for a babyface, but if it's done right, it still works, you know. And case in point, when they beat me 33 times, I had so many people just hit me up, be like, man, that was just a dick move by EC3, man. Like, are you okay? Like, you know, when they saw the physical, you know, lashes on my back, they're like, man, that hurt. No matter who you are, that had to hurt.
Does it take that many to really get people to feel sympathy for you?
You know, I think this day and age, you know, with all the social media and stuff, you know, I think it does. You know, when I was on Austin's podcast, I said the best. I said he made it so hard for the people to cheer for the baby faces now, because, you know, when he was first turning to Austin, he was the heel and people were cheering for him and everything. And now people want to cheer for the heel. So it's hard to get people to cheer the baby face. So, and I always tell people, to me, it's easier to work as a heel than it is a baby face, because it's easy to make people hate you. It's hard to make people cheer for you.
That's right. Stone Cold Steve Austin ruined the wrestling business.
He ruined it. Damn him.
God, that guy, man, what the hell was he thinking? Being liked by being such a bad, I mean, because he hated his boss and he drank beer and he had a nasty attitude. Now people like him. What the hell?
Right. I know, you know, and then of course, you know, they had no choice but to turn him babyface, you know? And,
yeah.
And I think that's what it takes is, you know, you have to be that prick for a while. And then, you know, the crowd will turn you sooner or later. Either they'll turn you babyface or they'll turn you heel.
I was going to say, what is the difference when it comes to Cowboy James Storm when you're supposed to be a babyface or a heel?
Man, it's just, I don't know, like, you know, as a babyface, that's really me out there, like, out there having fun and enjoying myself. But, you know, when I get to be a heel, like, that's just me cranked up, you know, 15, 20 notches where, okay, now let me do whatever I want to do and just be a prick, you know, and it's fun to be a prick. Like, you know, it's just, and, you know, when I met my wife, you know, we were doing heel beer money stuff, and she was like, wait. See, you're totally different than what you are, you know, in real life than what you're on stage as a bad guy. I was like, yeah, because I get to turn it up and I get to be someone else. But as a baby face, like that's me basically on stage.
Yeah. Do you still have the, what is it? The beer holster belt that can hold like a six pack?
Yes, I do.
Oh man. How often do you break that thing out?
Well, it's funny because I was just at a Kentucky bike rally this past weekend, and I wore it up there.
So. Really?
Yeah.
It's convenient, though, when you're just walking around, you just want to have a drink, you just go on your back, and boom, you get another fresh one right there.
Yes, I need to make one kind of like an igloo or something where you can just slide it in there and it keeps it cold.
Oh,
you know? I got to figure that out.
Yeah, that's the next thing. I mean, you've got all these big mugs now that can keep things cool. It's just got to find a way to store it on you to where it's not too cumbersome.
Right.
We can figure that out. That's $1 million device right there. If we can figure that out.
that's going on Shark Tank right there.
You don't still have the wagon or anything, do you?
Actually, you know, the funny thing is, I wish I could send you a picture now because I'm actually standing right beside my Boozer Cruiser.
Really?
Yeah, I have it at my house, and I just ride it around the neighborhood.
Because you are the unsanctioned TNA World Beer Drinking Champion, right?
That's right. Me and Eric Young, we made a living off of just drinking beer segments, about 5 or 6 years ago.
Between you and Eric doing that, and then you had you and Bobby out there, where he was the money and you were the beer. I mean, that I couldn't have thought of a more simple thing to get such a huge pop from people when they paired you guys together and you just cheered beer money and people went nuts.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's just one of those things. Is just, you know, they didn't really know what to do with me and Bobby at the time just because we had both just kind of finished up. Like, he just did a singles run, I think, with Booker T. And then, you know, I just finished up doing like little single stuff with Rhino or whatever. And their idea was it was going to pair us up for, you know, a couple weeks, a month or so, and then find something else for us to do. Well, you know, at first they just started calling us Storm and Rude and we go out or whatever. But then we were actually sitting at the L House in Orlando and it just popped up. You know, I just looked at him and I said, man, I said, dang it, I'm all out of beer money. And he just looked at me and he goes, that's our name. And I was like, yes, it is. And then we went with them. And at first they didn't want to do it, you know, but we just kept on TNA management. And finally, they're like, okay, if you guys want to do it, go do it. We'll trust you.
Can you explain those many evenings in the Ale House in Orlando where it seemed like all the fans finally figured out that that's where all the talent was and how crazy those nights got to be?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have a lot of new talent now that goes there, but it was nothing like it was, you know, back in the day. And you know, like
you took over that place.
Yeah. And especially before they built the back patio and they had the jukebox back there with pool tables. Like, we just sat back there and we get smashed just because we were in stumbling distance of our hotel. So
yep.
We didn't have to worry about driving or anything. We just walk over to the Doubletree, you know?
Yep.
And those nights with the guys, man, those are memories and stuff that, you know, guys like myself and yourself that were back in those days, like, we enjoyed it. We're like, man, that was so much fun back in those days. And the young guys, they'll never experience that because, to me, like, the days of social media and stuff like that kind of hurt times like that, because now everybody wants to film stuff, or, you know, you have fans trying to film you, and the guys got to be careful what they do now, because, you know, everybody has a cell phone.
Right. And it's difficult from that standpoint that, you know, plus on top of that, I always believe in there's a great thing when it comes to interaction with fans, but at the same time, you want to have that arm's length distance, because it makes people want to come out even more when, like, they can only get so close, or when they do get close to you, it becomes a special thing. And,
right,
you know, social media affects that. I mean, you know, there's no way to stop it, but I mean, it's just one of the things that come with social media. And I think it's one of the negative things in that, hey, you know what, guys can be stars. They still can be, but I always liked it when, you know, it meant that much more when you got to be around somebody. I'm going to go out of my way to go see so-and-so because I don't know when I'm going to get another chance to do it. And social media makes you that much closer, I think, to people and be able to interact with them, and something you couldn't do in the past.
Right. And I tell so many guys that now, because, you know, I don't go to the L House nearly as much. I might go once every 6 months or something, you know, because I always tell guys, like, people have figured out that's where all the guys go. So now when they show up, they think they're friends with you. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but didn't you kind of lose that special something about yourself if they see you, like, every night just hanging out at the L House with, you know, Joe Schmo or whatever. You know?
Right. Plus, back in those days, I mean, when you guys were hanging out there, I mean, this was at a time when, hey, we're a bunch of young guys. We've bandied together with this new promotion. We're all kind of together fighting, you know, fighting the man kind of thing. We're all working together towards this one big cause. And we're having a great time doing it. You know, we're doing something that's new and fresh that hasn't been seen in a long time. So, I mean, there's something else that goes to that whole process when you talk about the way it was done then.
Right. And I think that's what, you know, like Jeff is trying to bring back now, is for so long there's been so many guys just going out and do their own thing, you know, and it's not supposed to be that way. Like, you know, like you said, back in the day, we all banded together because we were just a bunch of unknown guys. You know, you hear the stories of ECW all the time, how those guys just banded together and just went against the grain. And that's how it was at the beginning of TNA. Like, all these guys just banded together, and now, you know, they're household names, but they banded together to make each other better, not just themselves.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's just different times now, and you see where everything's gone. So when it comes to you, because,
well,
you have...
I say everybody's fighting for those likes on social media now.
Yeah.
You know, instead of working together, everybody wants those likes or retweets.
I get this feeling that many times it's, hey, we all work for the same company. We want to do well, but, and I'm not saying, you know, pulling anybody out in particular, but you have to wonder sometimes, is somebody doing it for themselves, or are they doing it for the company?
Exactly.
And that's the tough thing when it comes to social media and trying to make a spot for yourself. I understand you got to take care of yourself and your living, but at the same time, you're all part of a company and you're trying to grow.
That's exactly right.
So when it comes to you now being there for 15 years, and, you know, I'm going to say it, you're 40 years old now. You know, what is your role behind the scenes? Do guys regularly come up to you and ask you for advice, or do you go out of your way to give it, or how does that work for you?
No, you know, I'm not going out of my way to give anybody advice. That's how I look at it. Like, but I'm not afraid to help someone out if I see something. But to me, you know, there's a lot of people who if you're trying to give them advice, they kind of look at you like, oh, well, I'm here, so I must know what I'm doing. No, because believe me, like, I was there at the beginning, and I thought I knew what I was doing, but I didn't have a clue. You know, I had guys like, you know, Mr. Perfect and Dusty and Macho Man and stuff like that just pulled me aside and just kind of give me advice and be like, look, if you want to do that, there's a way to do that, but do it this way. And, you know, the next time I'd go out and try it, and it worked, you know, and that's why I try to tell. I got a lot of guys, you know, I get a lot of guys, I'm like, you don't have to do 5,000 flips in 5 minutes. Like, it just, you know, you don't have to. You need to say some stuff for the next time you're on TV.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, and I help a lot of guys out with promos and stuff like that. And, but, you know, at the end of the day, and I tell people all the time, like, I feel better now and look in the best shape I've been in than I did when I was 20 years old, you know? So, it's just one of those things. I think, you know, times have changed, and, you know, now that I grew older, like, I just kind of realized, hey, if I eat right, I'll be in better shape instead of just drinking beer all the time.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I always tell guys all the time, I'm like, just like, and a lot of guys, once their matches are over, then it's over. Like, they don't really care to go back and watch them. And that's one of the things I tell guys all the time. I'm like, always just go back and watch your stuff. And like, oh, I could have done that better or done that better. And, you know, and there are a lot of guys that, you know, that come up to me and ask me, and that's what I tell them. And they're like, oh man, thanks for, you know, helping me out. And, so in a way it comes back to me because it was given to me when I started out.
You know what? I remember just a couple months ago, there was a lot of talk about, oh, cat's out of the bag. James Storm is going into the Hall of Fame this year. And then Jeff Jarrett just did this conference call recently, and he was just like, you know what? The Hall of Fame is for people that are winding down their career, or their careers are done in the ring. And that's not James Storm. So were you surprised by all the buzz that went into the Hall of Fame talk?
Yeah, I have no idea how that was even brought up. You know, I didn't say it before. And that's, I think like that, like Hall of Fame should be meant for people who are pretty much done wrestling. You know, not even winding down their career, who's pretty much done, you know. And to me, I'm not done by any means. Like I said, I've gotten in the best shape that I've ever been in my career. I feel great just because of the schedule that Impact has, been running. And to me, I can go another good 5 or 6 years at least, you know. I don't want to overstay my welcome. I'm just saying I still got good runs in me.
Yeah, I think you'll know when it's time for you, how you feel, where you're at right now. But, I mean, 40, at this point of wrestling, you know, that's not old. That's mature.
And that's what I try to tell everybody. I'm like, I've learned a lot more now. You know, I've learned how to work matches better. And Steve Austin, he always said, you really don't make money in wrestling until you're around, you know, 37, 38, or 9, 40. And because now you kind of learn the whole system of, you know, putting matches together and the backstage stuff and how to do a promo and how to get the crowd involved. And, you know, if stuff don't go right by the books when you're out there, you can change it on the fly, you know. So
when did you feel like you were really starting to get it when it came to putting a match together and it executing it well and doing promos? At what point did you feel like, okay, now I'm really starting to feel like I'm doing quality work?
I actually think it was when me and Bobby kind of just started doing beer money. Like we would just work with all these different guys, and I can learn and I can wrestle basically any style. You know, like I can't do all the backflips and the dives, but I can catch the guys who's doing the backflip and dives. You know, and I think it was just clicking with Bobby and learning his style and him learning mine, and then us just being able to feed off each other. I think that's what really helped, is because we'd be in the ring and we just sensed of what each other was going to do. You know, we can just feed off each other and just do, you know, be serious, or we can be as ridiculous as we wanted to be.
Yeah. And that was the thing for you, is that, like, I look at you and all the different, you know, tag teams you've been a part of and successful. I mean, you won championships with what, 4 different partners, correct?
5.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget about Christopher Daniels.
That's right.
You threw him in there.
Can't forget about Chris. Come on, man. So,
it was weird too. I remember it was me and him tagging up against Elix and Chris Harris, and it was just, I don't know. It worked.
it worked. But was there ever a time where you were like, okay, I'm being labeled as a tag team specialist. I don't want people to think of me only in that way.
You know, when people say that, like, to me, it really doesn't bother me because I grew up on tag team wrestling, like the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express. You know, all the guys like that. And to me, like, you know, even 3D, like, they're labeled a tag team specialist team, you know. And I always tell everybody, I'm like, but you got to look at it this way. And this is the way I look at it. My body didn't go through as much as all the singles wrestlers that had to wrestle singles matches every night when I had to do tag team stuff, because I was only taking half the bumps.
Right. It's just half the time you're also smacking each other over the head with beer bottles.
Right, exactly. But yeah, that's the way that I always looked at it. So
yeah, that's a smart way to look at it. I mean, there's nothing negative about it. I mean, it's weird how, like, there's been this, to some people, there's like this negative connotation when it comes to tag team wrestling, because it goes through its ups and downs when it comes to wrestling these days, when it used to be a staple so many years ago. But being a tag team specialist, to me, I mean, that's Bobby Eaton. That's Arn Anderson. I mean, you're talking about some of the greats in the business. There's nothing wrong with being a part of that.
Right. You know, but you a lot of people that are saying that are people who are just really just watching wrestling for the like last 5 years or something like that. You know, they don't realize like how important tag team wrestling is or was to professional wrestling. You know?
Yeah. And especially for, you know, the lineage because you grew up in the South, you live in the South, you understand that, you know, that quote unquote Southern wrestling and how important it has been over the years. And it could still be, you know, if they really get behind it and you put a focus on it. I mean, tag team wrestling could still be great.
Yeah. And I always tell people, I'm like, if you go back and you watch, Beer Money and the Motor City Machine Guns, like we proved that. Like we prove if you give us a platform and you give us time and you let us do what we're able to do and what we can do, I was like, we'll go out there and we'll outperform any singles match you have.
So a couple of years ago, and we talk about how long you've been with Impact, the one little blip was a couple of years ago where you weren't sure what was going to happen. You actually did a couple of shows for NXT and then you came back. What was it about going back? Was it just the familiarity of being with Impact for so long and that's where you wanted to be?
No, you know, that's not it at all. You know, I actually sat with Hunter the second night that I was down there after the match and, you know, just kind of talked to him and we were just filling each other out. And it was just one of those things where, wrestling to me is all about timing and just with the schedule of, you know, NXT and he was telling me, hey, we're going to try to run 100 to 120 shows, you know, from here on out throughout the year and stuff. And it's all great and everything, but where I was personally in my life, you know, I couldn't be on the road that much just because of how I had some family problems and my wife, she wanted to have another kid. So it was just one of those things where it just wasn't the right timing for me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always about fit. I mean, it's timing happens at different, you know, different places in your life when it comes to different things. You know, I'll remember being there that night when you came out. And I know a lot of people, there had been a lot of rumors about you going there. People are wondering like, okay, what's the reaction going to be? It's a totally different audience. It was a huge reaction that you got that night, man.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, every now and then when I turn it on and I watch some of their packages, they still use some of the audience reaction from the night that I was there.
Yeah.
For the packages. I'm like, wait, that's my guy. Like, you know, but, you know, it's one of those things. And Hunter, he straight up told me, he said, look, he said, go get your life together. He goes, this is my number in 2 years. He goes, maybe we can do business again.
There you go. You never say never in this business.
Right, exactly. And people can say what they want to say about Hunter, but to me, he treated me with respect. And, you know, for him just to say, hey, I completely understand, you know, you have to do what's best for you and your family. And, you know, and it wasn't a definitely, hey, call me back, let's do business. It was, you know, if we're able to do business, fine.
And I think the thing that some people were wondering was, like, how did they not lock him up to a contract? They put him on TV, but, you know, he appeared twice on TV. How did they not put him under contract? And now he's going right back to Impact. I was like, you know, that's the way it worked out.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, if you look, they use a lot of people on TV now there that are not locked into contracts. You know, they're doing all these specials and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, I wasn't under contract with anyone and they just asked me to come down, but they, you know, wanted to talk. And of course, while I'm there, hey, do you want to wrestle? Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. I got my gear here. I'm a wrestler. I always bring my gear. That's what we do.
I'm like, take your gear everywhere you go. You never know what's going to happen.
I'm just there to talk. Oh, wait, I got my gear. Yeah, I'll get out in the ring. Let's do it, man. Come on.
Well, I happen to have my gear. Well, yeah. I don't know.
You know, and the other thing was, too, like, so you go back to Impact, and it's like, all right, I'm back. And then the next thing you know, like, Bobby's gone. Eric's gone. I mean, everybody has their own situation, but it was so different from a time of some people thought if you worked for Impact, WWE wasn't going to be interested in you. And then you're there and then Bobby's there and then Eric's there. And it just goes to show that there's no bias against everybody. Like if there's a talented guy,
no,
they're going to go, you know, they'll be interested in you.
Yeah. And I think now, you know, especially when, you know, when Joe left and then I went and did my deal and now with Bobby and Ewa, you know, I think they're looking at like, man, like we need guys like this who are TV ready, who knows how to perform on TV to help out younger guys also. You know, because no matter how much they train them coming right out of the performance center, when you get in front of those cameras, it's a different story. You know, you got to be able to tell your story. You got to be able to stay within the time limit. You got to be able to know when, you know, to go home and everything. And, you know, a lot of the young guys don't know that. So I think, you know, with these other guys who are TV ready, it helps out, you know, a lot of younger talent.
Yeah, absolutely. Over the past year, I mean, you guys did the DCC. Why do you think that didn't work out better?
You know, there's a lot of reasons, but the number one reason that I want to say is it wasn't done the way that I had pitched it and wanted it to be, because we were actually supposed to come back as baby faces, but it never, like, I had this whole ordeal, like, just planned out, basically where, John, Biggs was going to be kind of like the Vince McMahon of Impact Wrestling, you know, like there was going to be a deal, you know, where Billy fired me and all this. And, then when I go backstage, me and John kind of get into it, and like the cops try to restrain me. Well, ends up they shoot me with a taser gun. So, and my brother's a cop. So I called him and said, "Hey, can y'all do this without killing me?" He's like, "Oh yeah, we can do it low voltage. It's all right." You know, I was like, "All right, cool." And we was going to do a deal where I had it set up to use my brother's jail. We was going to use a courthouse that the judge said we could use. And, it's basically going to be where a tape comes out of Biggs telling Brian Hebner, who was a referee, who kind of screwed up the count a little bit with me and Bobby on purpose or whatever, but that was never followed up with. And then saying, "Hey, no matter what, James Storm does not leave that world title." And Brian be like, "Well, he's my buddy." He's like, "Well, he's your buddy, but do you want to feed your family?" So Brian just, you know, without straight screwing me, kind of messed up the count a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so anyways, we go to court. And, well, actually, like, while I'm in jail, like, as soon as, like, they show me, like, going into jail, and as soon as they open up the door, you just see this guy just doing pull-ups in there with a huge tattoo on his back. And I kind of look at him, he drops down, turns around, and it's Gunner. And I'm like, "Oh, damn." His last thing they saw was me hitting Gunner's dad with the beer bottle and that whole thing with me and Gunner and stuff. So I go in and whatever, but while I'm in, I get the package of the disc with John or whatever. So we're in court, and the judge finds me not guilty or whatever, and it's Dixie, John, and their lawyer, then me and my lawyer, some of the boys on my side. So I leave, and I throw the thing down to John. I say, "Hey, this is yours. I'll see you real soon." So then it shows John, like, at home watching it, and he looks out his window, and he sees three guys in a mask, you know. And then when he looks back, we're gone, and I'm in his house. Do the old, as he turns, I walk away, you know, deal, without him seeing me, and there's a mask sitting there, and then the whole thing with Dixie, and Dixie's like, "Look." And then he has to come clean with Dixie, basically saying what he did and stuff, and Dixie's like, "You just messed up. Like, I know Storm. Like, he's coming after you, and he's going to kick your ass, and blah, blah, blah." And then, you know, the whole deal is like, okay, well, that's Storm, but who's the other two guys? And then it comes out that it's Gunner, and then kind of explain how Bram got out of a trunk, which they never explained. You know, he got threw in a trunk, got locked up, and he just got forgotten by it, and he just shows back on TV.
Hmm.
But anyways, and then I pitched the idea where they could have still turned it around where we grab Josh Matthews. He wants to interview with us, and we kind of rough him up a little bit. But it does the deal as he's getting thrown out. The camera just kind of pans as he's falling, you know, and it catches a fourth person over in the corner. And you don't know who that fourth person is. Well, fast forward it, whatever. Me and Lashley are having our championship match, and I had this planned out for this past Slammiversary. We have our championship match, and then EC3 comes in and tries to screw me and hits me with the beer bottle. 1-2, I kick out. and then they're like, what the crap? Bram and Kingston come down, beat up EC3 a little bit. They kind of fight off. But then the fourth member comes out and takes off the mask, and it's Jarrett, and he hits Lashley with the guitar, and then I pin Lashley.
Wow.
And it kind of wraps around the whole original thing. Like, this was one of my original guys that I hired at the very beginning, you know, or something like that, you know?
And you were going to tell the whole story that way.
Yeah, you were tying up a lot of loose ends there, too, in that storyline.
Right. And to me, that's what storylines are supposed to do. Like, you can draw people out, but sooner or later, you got to pull it all back in and make it all make sense at the end.
My favorite part about that angle is that you wanted to do a shoot taser.
Yeah, I know. And I'm not talking about a handheld taser. I'm talking about one where they shoot you and it sticks in you.
Right. That's even worse.
Right.
You don't do anything halfway, do you?
not at all. I said, hey, if I'm going to go with it, I told my brother, I was like, you want to make sure you hit the right spot, too. Don't try to shoot me.
No, nothing below the belt, okay, buddy? How about right this little meaty range right here, okay?
Right.
Hey, before we get out of here, I know that you guys are getting ready to go back on the road a little bit more when it comes to Impact Wrestling. What's that going to be like to do shows outside the Impact Zone and do some house shows again?
It's going to be great because, you know, like we've been in the Impact Zone for so long. And, I understand the financial stuff and like that. But, you know, over a period of time, it just kind of gets the same old because you have the same, you know, 50, 60 people on the floor that are the people who come all the time, but then the rest of the people are the park people. So it's really hard to judge who's over and who's not, you know, because like I said, those 50 people go to Ale House all the time, you know, and just become friends with people. So I think with us getting back on the road, like in a show management, okay, well, this guy, we need to start pushing this guy because he's really over, or, you know, do something with this guy here, you know, and it also helps younger talent learn to work, not go out and just wrestle and do all these moves, but to learn to work.
And then when you're on the road, what's the go-to place to go to? And there's not an Ale House around. Are you the Waffle House Cracker Barrel guy?
Oh, we always make a joke all the time. We used to anyways. We're on the road all the time. But, wrestlers are the only people who have a Waffle House credit card.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at it and it's really the only place that's open, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know,
so. You can get a salad over there if you really want one. They have a salad.
I don't know if you want a salad from Waffle House.
I'm not saying you want one. I have seen a wrestler get a salad from Waffle House into the double take. I was just like, what?
What? You saw a wrestler get...
I will expose who this person was. It was Mick Foley. Mick Foley got a salad from a Waffle House one time.
What?
Yeah.
I'm going to have time to talk with Mick.
He was trying to lose weight. This is probably, I don't know, like 5 years ago or something. And it was up in North Carolina at a convention. It's like midnight. And he wanted to get a bite to eat. And there he comes walking up and ordered a salad. I was like, that's a first.
Wow. Yeah, I would never picture Mick ordering a salad from Waffle House.
I don't picture Mick ordering a salad anywhere. Not that I'm calling him anything, but that just never seemed like it's in his diet. It's not my diet that regularly either.
But the problem is you can't really say anything to him because it's Mick.
I know. You know? He's a great guy. We all love Mick. But yeah,
Mick's the best.
Well, everybody can keep up with you on Twitter. You're at James Storm Brand. It's been great catching up with you. It's been a while, so keep up the great work, and looking forward to seeing you continue doing things in the ring.
Thank you very much, brother. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks again to Cowboy James Storm for the conversation. He's always very honest and very insightful about different things. So I look forward to seeing what's coming up with him as his career continues. He might be 40 years old, but like you said, he is not planning on hanging up anytime soon as long as his body feels good. And we'll see what the future holds for him when it comes to Global Force Wrestling and anywhere and everywhere else that he continues to work. Also, a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast. Like I said before, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn app, rate and review the podcast. And also support us on Patreon. It's patreon.com/betweentheropes. I will be back again on Thursday with another podcast talking about the week in WWE. I miss American Alpha already. So we'll be talking about that, plus all the other news and notes when it comes to the wrestling world. So thanks again, everybody, for listening, and I will talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.